This is Ozarks at Large. It's difficult to separate food from any other part of our lives. It's not just nutrition. It's economic, environmental, political. A course called Food Matters will be offered by the University of Arkansas Honors College next spring. But a preview lecture will be offered to the public next Tuesday via Zoom. We recently, via Zoom, reached the three scholars who will lead that lecture: Margaret Sova McKay, the Dean of the University of Arkansas Law School, Jenny Popp, Associate Dean of the Honors College, and Kurt Rome, Associate Dean for International Education. We asked them about what we call food, how food's produced, how food's delivered, and more. Jenny Popp says we probably don't consider food as much or as often as we should.
When you look at consumer perception stories, there's a lot of people that go to the supermarket and take for granted the opportunity to select among 10 different varieties of apples and 4 different types of milk, et cetera. There's not a lot of thought process that goes into it from the day-to-day consumer. The expectation is that food is there and always will be there for us, but that is not the reality.
I was going to say, I think Jenny's exactly right. And from the legal perspective, there's so much that goes on, as Kurt said, on the way to the grocery store, that it's important for people to understand and, you know, think about some of the top issues like eat meat, don't eat meat, buy GMO, don't buy GMO. Those are really complex issues that really don't boil down neatly into a simple buy, don't buy kind of binary decision. There are consequences of those purchases that rest on a lot of things like science and economics and law that I think we all think are really important for students to understand. I think we all wish everyone understood them.
So how do you, if you can't boil this down, how do you as instructors for this course begin to come to some idea of what you're going to talk about? Because you're not going to be able to hit it all. What have those conversations been like?
Fun?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. They've been a lot of fun. And I think we began with just basically looking at definitions of food. What is food? And then what is the definition of different types of food? What is meat? What is milk? You know, what are those factors that legally, economically, and nutritionally make something what it is? And that's the foundation of all our discussions going forward in this class.
So let me jump off there. When you say, what is milk, where can that lead? Milk doesn't just come from a cow, right?
Well, no. A dairy producer would say milk would only come from a cow.
Okay.
Yeah, legally it does.
But an almond producer might have a disagreement with that. And a soybean producer might have a disagreement with that.
And that can create opportunities for legal minds, correct, Margaret?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there has been a federal definition of milk, which is, you know, the secretion of a mammal and typically tied to cows. And when you think about soy milk and almond milk, you may have noticed in the grocery store that those are now being labeled as beverage, oat beverage, almond beverage. And this is exactly why, because the legal definition allowed there to be a challenge to that different kind of labeling. And also some concerns, frankly, on the nutritional side, that people buying milk often associate the nutritional value of that milk with dairy milk, and that may not always be the case. And so there are interesting consumer issues here as well that are worth thinking about. Like I said earlier, it's not as simple as I should be able to call whatever that thing, beverage is, milk. We have to think a little bit more deeply about that, but always I think the consumer and what they think they're getting is a touchstone.
The discussions over labeling, is that a relatively recent phenomenon?
No.
No?
No, you can go back in the law to some of our most classic cases that actually have to do, for example, with a product called Milnut. And Milnut was a kind of alt milk that was available on the market and was challenged by manufacturers of evaporated milk because it wasn't pure milk. It didn't have the same nutritional value to exact nutritional value, but there was an argument that consumers were actually confused about Milnut versus other kinds of canned dairy milk. And that case goes back to post-Depression era. Hmm. Not a new issue.
Well, okay, let's take something milk because we don't necessarily see it in its raw form. But Kurt, Jenny, what about apples or corn or asparagus? Do we have those sorts of issues with things that we buy in the produce aisle?
Well, yes, the answer to that is yes. The idea of a grade standard in produce really started with an apple industry in Washington State wanting to differentiate the quality of their fruit from other fruit grown in Michigan or New York. And so they started a grade standard, which has now become a national grade standard. And as soon as it became a national grade standard, then Washington State had to say, well, we're going to essentially create our own grade standard called a Washington State Extra Fancy, which, of course, New York and Michigan can't use. And so they've created standards to create value. And essentially, you know, those are trademark standards now. And even trademark logos around what an apple ought to look like in shapes. And so those kind of issues, again, you might not see that at the grocery store, except in price and quality kinds of considerations. Then, you know, the apple industry in the United States for years did not want to let genetically modified apples enter into the United States. And the reason was is in the late 1980s, apples were accused of creating cancer in babies. In a 60 Minutes presentation about consuming apple juice and the use of a chemical in the industry, and the industry essentially collapsed for a year. It's never actually regained the prominence that it was in the mid-80s in terms of average apple consumption. And so the apple industry became so sensitive to a bad reputation for apples, and they wanted to get back to an apple a day keeps the doctor away reputation, that we didn't allow genetically modified apples into our country, not, you know, really legally, but just by political pressure and market pressure. You know, the American apple industry essentially said, if you want to market apples, you will not, at your stores, like, you know, big box stores, you will not sell GMO apples. If you do, we won't sell to you. So wow. It became controversial just on, on the marketing side. And now that's changed a little bit as consumers are understanding that.
And Jenny, do we see this with other things that come out of the ground?
Sure. One of the things you mentioned was corn, and Kurt mentioned genetically modified. And genetically modified products, they have fans and foes. And this connects us back to the labeling issues that Margaret talked about. A lot of people want their products to be labeled, whether they contain GMO products or if they're GMO-free. And it's really put supply chain and blockchain issues at the forefront of our business management of these products so that we can trace the origins of the corn that ended up in our tortilla chips back to the farm to determine whether or not they were GMO or not.
I was at the grocery store not long ago. I had an assignment from my wife, Laura, to get some diced tomatoes. It sounded easy. Then I stopped in front of the display, and there were 16 different varieties of diced tomatoes. Is this a good thing? Do we need 16 varieties of diced tomatoes, or is this just, you know, is this good for the consumer, or does this add to the confusion?
I would say it definitely adds to the confusion, but it can be a good thing if you're an educated consumer. I spent a few years after undergraduate in Africa, and when I came back and going to the food store, I was paralyzed walking into the food store and seeing 10, 15 varieties of anything. The produce section alone made me want to cry, mainly with joy, but still cry because you weren't used to having such a broad selection of things to look at. It really takes a consumer to be educated to understand when those big words on a label really mean something, or if are they just a marketing gimmick?
I mean, and I'll open this to everyone. How does a consumer, how does an eater become better educated?
Well, you start by taking Food Matters in the Honors College.
That's exactly right, Kurt.
You know, these are smart people to begin with, and we hope that they will be a tad bit brighter, more informed, and intellectual about the discussion topics at the end of the semester.
Yeah, we really want to break down the legal implications, the environmental implications, and the economic implications of choices. What does it mean? And nothing is clear cut. There's pros and cons to both on both sides. And we want the students to be aware that there's ramifications of choices, whether you're choosing something by a legal definition or not. There's going to be good and bad consequences across the economic and environmental spectrum.
Yeah. You know, Michael Pollan, the author, who is kind of an interesting and controversial author in terms of our food system, and I'm going to paraphrase him, but he essentially said, every bite we take is a vote about our food system. And so, you know, and that's, again, food matters. If we would consider that what we eat becomes an economic ballot cast, a legal ballot cast, and an environmental ballot cast, then all of a sudden, every bite becomes very important. It really does start to matter. Because every bite is a decision process, more than fulfilling, you know, our hedonistic need for fun in eating and our nutritional need for fun in eating. It really does impart a message through this complex food system all the way back to farmers.
Do you think that there has been something different about preparing and thinking about this class this year? During a pandemic? Do you think that's altered at all how you've thought about this?
I've answered that from my perspective in law, which is yes. You know, at the law school right now, our LLM program in food and agriculture law is offering a national class on food law and policy and COVID-19. And so many of the issues that I've been talking about with Kurt and Jenny have important you know, ramifications with COVID-19, whether that is some of the things we've read about with waste that relate to the supply chain and fields not being harvested because the restaurant industry isn't there and there aren't other supplier contracts in place, the worker issues that have arisen in many meat processing plants. And then the coming wave or the wave that is here of food insecurity and how we address some of the issues. I think COVID-19 probably highlights food system issues that Kurt, Jenny, and I would have touched on regardless, but it puts them again, maybe more in the minds of our students, as well as makes their importance even more pressing.
I would agree with what Margaret said. Kyle, we talked earlier this spring about the disruptions in the meat industry, particularly in the cattle and pork industry. And you add to that the massive amounts of increase in unemployment and less money in people's pockets to actually go out and get food if they can get it because of all the disruptions across the supply chain. This year's really added to the emphasis of what we want to talk to. You know, we think about just in the milk industry, two of the nation's largest dairy companies, Dean and Borden, are both in bankruptcy. And that was coming anyway. A lot of it has to do with the popularity of alternative dairy products. Some of the things that we're talking about, the people's lack of consumption of sugary cereals anymore, that has reduced a lot of milk consumption. But you add those folks that have been impacted by the bankruptcy of their company, the loss of thousands of jobs. People are just hanging on to try to get as much food as possible. Our University of Arkansas food pantry, the Full Circle Food Pantry, has had a banner summer, and I don't know if that's something we all really want to be proud of. They've had more people coming into that food pantry this year than ever before because the situation has become so dire. in a lot of communities, and the importance of getting nutritional food in a, into a community is more important than it ever has been before.
Jenny Popp, Associate Dean of the Honors College, Margaret Sova McCabe, the Dean of the University of Arkansas Law School, and Kurt Rome, Associate Dean for International Education, will lead a preview lecture of their class, Food Matters. It's a lecture that's open to the public, available via Zoom, Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. To find out how to attend that virtual lecture, look for the link on the bottom half of the page at honorscollege.uark.edu.